Okay, so today's class 28. We're talking about Sefer Shmuel and today's King David and Jerusalem, part one. You'll see, we're learning Sefer Shmuel, but I'm going to take the opportunity to talk about Yerushalayim because it's a popular topic and also a contended city. So my title for the next either 2 or 3 weeks will be Yerushalayim, a city for God, or a city for the people, or a city for the monarchy. And you'll understand the title a lot better. Maybe not by the end of today, but by the end of next week, hopefully for sure. So just a way of introduction. So we discussed already when we talked about why David is chosen over Shaul, which is not the topic of our book, but it's sort of a side topic. Our topic we explained was a little bit different, but we did talk about that question. What makes David special? We talked about one of the things is the centrality of Yerushalayim. Once he becomes king over all of Israel, all of his efforts to put God at the center of society, which was reflected by putting the focus of all of his endeavors on building the capital city in Yerushalayim and bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim and wanting to build a Mikdash in Yerushalayim and Sefer Tehillim and then doing Tzedek HaMishpat. So we discussed that already a couple weeks ago, but now we're up to that point in Sefer Shmuel itself. And David finally secures the kingdom. And the first thing that David does, as we mentioned already, is once he's king over all of his own, all the tribes accept him, he moves his capital city. First, he captures Yerushalayim, then moves his capital city there and wants to build a Mikdash there. And the question is going to be why he does that. And we're going to give three classic reasons, okay, which are all not mutually exclusive. One is we need a city for God. And God needs a city. Am Yisrael needs a Beit HaMikdash. And the goal of Am Yisrael is to serve God. And we need sort of a city for God or for a place where we could serve God. And therefore, there was some tradition about the holiness of Yerushalayim. And that's why I'm calling a city for God. We also discussed briefly the political reason to unify the country between the tribes of Leah's children and Rachel's children, being the border between Binyamin and Yehuda. So that would be another reason to move the temple from, to move the capital. Again, not for religious reasons, for political reasons. Or there might be something, which we'll see probably next week, about what's unique about the dynasty, not just the king not King David himself, but his dynasty, some deeper connection between Malchut Beit David and the city of Yerushalayim, which will a topic that will take us more into Sefer Melachim, and that will require some explanation. Let me stop to share for a minute and discuss something real quick. Maybe we'll put it to a vote, or you can raise your hands or chat, etc. If someone asked you, is Yerushalayim chosen because it was special, or is Yerushalayim special because it was chosen? I'll explain the question. Meaning, was it known since time of creation that Jerusalem was a special city? Was there something special about Yerushalayim, and therefore it's the place for the Mikdash? Is there some intrinsic holiness to Yerushalayim, and therefore that's the best place to build the Mikdash? Or Yerushalayim itself is no different than any other hill or mountain in the country, but once it was chosen, that's what made it special. Okay, any quick comments? Let me check if anyone wrote something in the chat already. Probably people asking for the source sheet. Okay.
The latter comment.
Okay. It's special because it was chosen. Okay. Any other votes? You can speak up also.
The latter. Your second position.
Which was what? Remind us.
That after it became a political center, they imbued it with chosenness. Because we had other religious sites, Shiloh, Ebal, that were very important in our history, and maybe even more important than Yerushalayim, and they just sort of were erased with the ascendancy of Jerusalem.
Okay. So, I see we're going back and forth on the chat pretty much. Some people say Yerushalayim was already chosen from the time of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu knew it was special. It was chosen since creation, somebody said. And so what we're going to see, I'll call it a machloket between Tanakh and the Rambam. How's that? Now, the reason why the question is interesting, I'm not saying it's the same, but just to clarify the question, is Am Yisrael special and therefore God chose us? Or because God chose us, we were special? Or I'll go back to the Avot, speaking of Avraham Avinu. Was Avraham Avinu special and therefore he was chosen by God to start a nation? Or God picked Avraham Avinu to start a nation, and that's what made him special. Do you understand how the questions are similar? It has a lot to do with the understanding of what's called intrinsic holiness. Is holiness the reason for chosenness, or is holiness the result of chosenness? I think I'm assuming it's a deep philosophical question, but I'm not too much into philosophy. It's just from the pshat level. We don't know. So most children will tell you that Avram chose God. That's a beautiful midrash, but it doesn't say that in Chumash at all. In other words, out of nowhere in Chumash, God just picks Avram, you know, pretty much out of nowhere. And then God starts a nation. And doesn't tell us, when God picks Noach, we're told beforehand that Noach was a tzaddik, etc. Doesn't say that about Avram Avinu. It doesn't mean he wasn't, but we don't have stories that all the Midrashim fill in. In other words, if I follow Chumash, out of nowhere, God picks Avram Avinu to start a nation, and that's what makes it special, the fact that God chose him. Logically, there must have been something special about Avram Avinu, and that the Midrash fills in. So if I follow the Midrash about Avram breaking the idols and, but, you know, asking all these questions and finding God on his own, so therefore Avram was special and therefore God chose him. But if I follow Chumash, God chooses Avram and therefore he's special. So we're going to follow something very similar in Yerushalayim. And like many questions like that, I don't think you will ever have a definite answer, but it's important to understand, you know, both approaches. Put it this way. If that understanding leads to haughtiness, then it's a bad explanation. In other words, if we're chosen because we're special, and that will lead to people thinking we're better than others, then Chumash goes against that, and that would be a bad conclusion. If our chosenness is special and that leads us to better behavior, then there's nothing wrong with those type of explanations, as long as it leads to not to haughtiness, but to acting properly. Now, I'll close up the chat, and we'll get back to our source sheet. So, unlike most shiurim, we're going to begin with the Rambam today. Now, the Rambam has 14 books, of course, you know, the Kaviyad, and two of them are dedicated to the service in the temple. Now, those who know Marin Nevuchim and like to say the Rambam is one sort of anti-Korbanot, everyone knows that approach. When they study Ramban and Rambam on Korbanot, you know, Ramban thinks it's something that God needs, etc., something very basic, you know, because Noach's not in competition, and Rambam, Maimonides and Marin Nevuchim, seems to claim that, you know, God would rather without it, but since that was the common practice, we have sort of had a keep up with other religions kind of idea. I oversimplified it. Nonetheless, there's two entire books of the 14 dedicated to temple service. One Sefer Avodah, and one about the worship, and one about Sefer Korbanot, the sacrifices we bring. And Sefer Avodah begins with the laws of Beit HaMechira, the laws of the Beit HaMikdash. So we're going to begin with a very interesting Rambam, which is not typical for the Rambam. I'll share my screen in Hilchot Beit HaBchira, and I can share my screen. Here we go. Okay, here's the Rambam. I only found a Hebrew Rambam. I should have looked for an English one, but I'll translate. It's very easy Hebrew. First, he says in chapter 2, the Mizbeach, the altar in the Beit HaMikdash, its place, Mekomo Mechuvan Biyoter, its place is very special, very exact, precise. He's saying, once Jerusalem was chosen and the place to build the Mizbech, and Dafka of all places, the altar, okay, we'll never change the place where the altar is. Shenemar, we'll quote a Pasek Divrei Amim, which we're going to spend more time on probably next week. It'll take us a week till we get there. Probably next week, sure, we'll get to the version of this story in Divrei Amim. But Dafka, the source that he's quoting, Zem Mizbech Lo'olam Yisrael, when David chooses Yerushalayim to be the place for the Beit HaMikdash, and this is the place for the Mizbeach, it seems like David is choosing it, making, not that God's telling him to build the Mizbeach there, David makes that decision, which sort of goes against what the Rambam was going to say in a minute, but we'll keep that in mind when we do that next week. But he quotes a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, after God answers David's prayer, after that terrible three-day plague happens in after counting the people. Now, then he says as follows, and this is going to follow now, that Yerushalayim is always special. Over Mikdash Nekad Yitzchak Avinu, in the same place, in the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, that's the place where Akedat Yitzchak happened. We quote a pasuk from two psukim, one from Breshit, where God tells Avram, Lech Lecha Eretz HaMoriah, that's where the Akedah takes place. And in Divrei Hayamim, we're told, when Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash, Vayechol Shlomo Livnot Beit Hashem B'Yerushalayim B'Har HaMoriah. We're told that Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash in Har Moriah. So the Rambam, like most Parshanim do, tie together the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, which tells us that Shlomo built the Mikdash, not just in Yerushalayim, but in the same place in Har Moriah, which assumes that's where the Akedah was, based on the Pasuk in Lech Lecha, which could be understood differently, but that's a classic explanation. Asher nira le David aviu, asher echin b'mkom David b'gon anan ha'ayu. See, he's quoting the source in Divrei Hayamim where David builds a Mizbeach on the threshing floor of Arnon the Jebusite, and that stops the where God stopped the plague, where he encountered the Malach, and he decides to build an altar and pray to God. Now, then he says, so first he brings a proof from Psukim. Got it? He brings a proof from verses in Breshit and Divrei Hayamim. And then he brings Masorah. Masorah's tradition. Masorah B'yad HaKol. He says, like, this is standardized, this is called party line Judaism, or rabbinic Judaism. Shamakom Shabana Bo David Shlomo HaMizbech B'gorn Aravna Hu HaMakom Shabana Bo Avraham HaMizbech V'kara Lev Yitzchak. Says, it's a well-known fact, he says, a well-known tradition, to the same place where the Akedah took place, that's where David built the Beit HaMikdash and the Mizbech on the threshing floor of Aravna. It's the same place where Noach built the Mizbech coming up to Teva, which means that's Hari Ararat. According to most people, it's up in Turkey. He takes another Midrash, which is not based on Psukim, other than the fact that it's built on the fact that that's where Noach built his Mizbech after the flood was over. I'll try to bring connection, a reason for that later on. Remember, Kain Hevel brought offerings to God. So that was the same place. And then, according to this, Adam Arishon brought a Korban when he was born. And that was the place he was created from. And notice, Rambam is going from something sort of based on Pshat to Midrash, to a far-fetched Midrash, to an unheard of Midrash. We know that Noach brought an offering to God. He built the Mizbeach, that we know. We know that Cain and Hevel brought an offering to God. So I can say maybe there was a Mizbeach. I don't think there's any source in Chumash that Adam Rishon brought any type of sacrifice to God or any type of Korban. But according to this tradition, Adam Rishon built where he was created. Amru Chachamim, Adamim Kom Kapo Divra. Okay? The rabbis taught us that man was created from the place of his kapara. Now, I'm going to take a break, and what I want to try and do, let me turn off the share for a minute. I want to try to explain why the Rambam, the rationalist, is all of a sudden turning to Midrash. It's like, it's not, if I'm not mistaken, it's very atypical of the Rambam, isn't it? Root's agreeing with me, I see. It's not even Rabbi J, right? It's not the typical Maimonides approach. So maybe someone forged it. I don't know. I doubt it. I'm just making that up. But it's really strange. Now, what I want to claim, and again, I'm making a wild suggestion, but I think that's the way I understand it. I'm a big fan. I hold the Rambam as a Tanachist, but he only admits it in his introduction to Mor Nevuchim, right? Where basically he says, in Maimonides' introduction to the Guide of the Perplexed, he said he planned on writing a commentary on Chumash. That's what he's saying. And then he says, but in his commentary on Chumash, he was going to explain what it's really about, because he says it's much deeper than meets the eye. There's something really deep going on in Chumash, he says. And he says, when you study Chumash in depth and realize how deep it is, it's about our connection to God, you'll find amazing things. But then he said, I couldn't write that commentary because God wanted to hide it. Because if God wanted us to figure it out, he would have. So he's saying, if I would explain the depth of Chumash, it's not fair, because God didn't want to make it so easy. He says, I had to work hard to figure this out. So he said, therefore, I can't spill the beans. But then he says, I can't go to the grave and not share my understanding. And then he says, I'm going to hide my understanding of Chumash in Mor Nevuchim. Got it? I think oversimplified, but anyone ever read Rambam's introduction in Mor Nevuchim and can corroborate? The Asher is agreeing. I oversimplified it, but that's his introduction. Now, I want to show you a source for the idea that Adam HaRishon brought a, not that he not that he in reality in but there's something thematic about Adam Arishon and the place of the Migdash. Why? Because what does Chazal say? What does Chazal tell us? That the place where Adam Rishon was created, that's the place of Kapara. Now, anyone know a Rashi that talks about that the place where the Beit HaMikdash is somewhere in Chumash, that the Beit HaMikdash is the place of Kapara? The place of Mizbeach is where Adam Rishon was created. Anyone know Rashi anywhere in Chumash? Okay, I'll give you a little. Anyone remember Yaakov's dream? Okay, and where did he lie down his head on? Wait, Ruth, you're muted.
Okay, in Beit El, but the sulam was on a diagonal, and it was really
The rabbi has, according to Chumash, his dream is in Beit El. According to the rabbis, his dream is in Yerushalayim. Got that? Now, somehow they have this ladder, the painter's ladder, that's like, that 1 foot of the ladder is it's like a V, the ladder, but a like a painter's ladder, but not equal. No, but from Be'er Sheva, one leg is in Be'er Sheva, the other leg is in Beit El, and the middle of its like the top of the ladder where the painter stands is over Yerushalayim. That's how they solve the problem. That's the famous Rashi. But I want to try to explain why Chazal understand there's some connection between where man was built and the Mikdash. Now, the first character in Chumash to talk about building a temple is Yaakov Avinu. Agreed? Now, why did Yaakov Avinu make a pledge to build a house for God? The first, if I'm not mistaken, the first character in Chumash to talk about a Beit Elokim, a house for God, is Yaakov, isn't it? Now, what led him to that conclusion? Okay. Why did Yaakov decide, oh, this is a place to build a house for God? Anyone remember?
He woke up from his dream and he said, this makom is where God is.
And how do you figure that out?
Because
Did
he
the
had a
dream,
dream.
he
He had
saw
a
he saw
dream.
angels going up and down a ladder.
Yeah.
He didn't see a house. He didn't see a house for God in his dream. When he woke up, he says, oh, this is a great place to build one. He saw a ladder. He saw a gate, maybe.
But he saw Nitzav Olav. So he sees God at the top of.
Hashem is over him,
Yeah.
right? And he sees in his dream, he sees a gate to heaven because he sees angels of God going up and down. But he doesn't see a house, right? On the other hand, what does God tell him there? God tells him that he's going to be with him and take care of him, etc. But God appeared to him, and pretty much it seems like he answered his prayer. What I want to claim is, a place that God chose, a place where God answers prayer, is a Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem. In other words, Yaakov decides to build a mikdash or a house for God in a place where God answered prayer. And I want to show you where it comes from. In all the analogies of the offspring of Avraham Avinu, what are is our offspring compared to? There's a lot of analogies, right? In other words, give me some examples of how numerous we're going to be.
Sand, stars.
There's sand and stars, right? Kochvei Hashamayim and Kochol HaSfer Shvat Hayam. In fact, I think God says that at the end of the Akedah, right? At the end of the Akedah, Bi Nishbati Nim Hashem. Okay? You'll be like Kochvei Hashamayim or Kochol HaSfer Shvat Hayam. Now, that's when you have the two together. The first time, Kochvei Hashamayim, you have in Brit Ben Haptarim. Any other analogy?
Kafar
One?
Haaretz.
Afar Haaretz. And that's the very first one, isn't it? Now, where's the first time? Anyone knows where the first time we have the word afar in Chumash is? The word afar, Ayin Peresh.
Adam,
Adam was
Adam,
made afar min Adama.
Kriyat Adam.
That's right. Now, the next time we have afar is where? Not, we're going to have it again in Yaakov's dream. But when God promises Avraham Avinu the land after Lot leaves, I'll show you in a minute. After, remember, let me open up.
Yanochi
Yeah.
Afar ve'efer.
Oh, you're right. That's it. That's in chapter 15, but there's one before then. Hafar Vafer is really cute, but that's that'll explain something else later. But open up Breshit for a second.
In chapter 13. In chapter 13.
Yes, beforehand, in chapter 13 already.
Yeah.
After he leaves Lo. But remember, Avram comes back from Egypt. I mean, let's go back to the end of chapter 12. In chapter 12, as soon as Avram makes Aliyah, oh, I want to share with you something. We sort of didn't start to share yet, but it's sort of related. It just came to me Friday night. I'm not sure if I'm right, but in the Chododi Dikrat Kala, you know, the Kabbalistic understanding that it's not just a master servant relationship or a parent child relationship, but a relationship with God, Bishi, like a boyfriend girlfriend relationship. And Shabbat is the Kala of, the Chododi Dikrat Kala. You know, meeting God every Shabbat is like a Chatan meeting a Kala. And the Shekhinah now becomes a feminine. So the first pasuk, Shmor V'Zachor V'Dibur Echad, is from Sefer Devarim, the beginning and end of the speech. But where's the Krat Shabbat L'Chuvan Echa? Wait, the Krat Shabbat L'Chuvan Echa? Gihi Mokar Bracha, right? L'Chuvan Echa, where's that? Almost everything that in the Chodori is Psukim, isn't it? Most of them are from Yishayahu. You know that, like most of them are from Yishayahu. With they're psukim about Yerushalayim without ever mentioning Yerushalayim. That was who quote psukim in the song. Wait, let me stop my share for a minute, because I think there's something you guys don't know. I mean, you weren't aware of. Make sure to see the faces. Everyone knows L'Chododi, right? You realize that most of the stanzas, like Hitori Hitori Hitnari Miafar Kumi Ori. Remember, they're all from Shiva. Most of them are from Shiva and Nechamta. They're all from Yishayel, about returning to Yerushalayim, returning to Israel, etc. And almost all the psukim that he alludes to are quotes from psukim that in the original pasuk, or right next to them, you have the word Yerushalayim, but Yerushalayim is never mentioned in the Chodori, correct? Mikdash Me'alech Iram Lucha, which we'll get to soon. Remember Iram Lucha? Remember that in my title, I gave away something. The city of the monarchy. Now, almost everything's built on psukim, but the word Yerushalayim is never mentioned, but it's all about Yerushalayim, isn't it? Now, you know what the academics tell you? Why they're doing, remember it's written in Sfat by Rav Shlomo Alkaviz. Why is Yerushalayim not being mentioned? You know the famous argument in Sfat between the rabbis in Yerushalayim and the rabbis in Sfat about renewing the smicha? So in academia, they'll tell you that's the people in Sfat giving it, you know, getting back at Yerushalayim for not agreeing with them about the smicha. They purposely left Yerushalayim out, like sort of like Sfat's replacing Yerushalayim. It's sort of a hidden, not insult, but hidden, maybe a stab, whatever you want to call it, because they're angry with the rabbis in Yerushalayim who don't accept the smicha of Rabbi Yehuda Berav. But I totally disagree. If you understand the Kabbalists in Sfat, this has to do with Mamad Har Sinai as well. When you want to emphasize something, you hide it. It's called obfuscation. And within, you want to make something special, you hide it, but you only find it when you search for it. Almost like God. Same thing with Har Sinai, if you know the story about how close we are to God at Har Sinai. If you want to make something dear, you hide it, but you hide it in a way that only people who look for it will find it. There's hiding things which you don't want anyone to find. But sometimes you're hiding something and you want them to find it, but you want them to work for it. So in a very deep Kabbalistic way, L'Chododi is hiding Yerushalayim because that's how you find it. Got my point? That's called the Shitmot Tidrushu. Anyway, I'm getting off track because because I was thinking about this on Friday night. But what my claim is that everything in the Chododi are alluding, the psukim alluding to something very deep. So the first stanza is easy, is Shomor V'Zachor, that's the speech in Devarim. But Likrat Shabbat L'Chuvan Echa, I think is Lech Lecha. Now there's two Lech Lechas, that everyone knows, right? Avram begins with Lech Lecha, to coming to the land of Israel. And the last Lech Lecha is the Akedah. And all the Avram stories are enveloped by Lech Lecha and Lech Lecha, right? That's a classic. I'm sure we've heard that 1,000 times. That's like a gift. That's like such a classic structured No, the Avram stories. Rav Yoni Gross has got a whole book on that unit. But Lech Lecha and Lech Lecha, and Lech Lecha begins, and then Barbracha Mavarchacha, Benivruchu Vacha Komishpot Adama, and then the Akedah ends with the Bracha, remember? Givarecha Bracha Barbez Arucha Kochove Shmaim Bechash Shvat Ayam, Biras Arachat Shalival. They both begin with Lech Lecha and have a Bracha. Got that? Now, therefore, Likrat Shabbat, now Shabbat is going to be an Od Brit in the realm of time, just like the Mikdash will be an Od Brit in the realm of space. It was coming to the Mikdash reminds us of our Sinai. Is the Shabbat supposed to remind us of our Sinai? You can't miss that in Chumash. But it could be that Lechu v'Nelcha goes back to Lech Lecha, Kihi Makora Bracha, which goes back to Lech Lecha, and the Akedah. So I'm saying that there's a, I'm pretty sure that's what, why he chose those words. And then Mirosh Mikedem Nesuchav, that's Sefer Breshit, isn't it? Mirosh Mikedem. Sof Maseva Machshava Tchila. No, that's referring for sure to creation. Anyway, why did I bring that up? Because I want to show you something from Lech Lecha. Remember, what are we talking about before I get too off track? I'm trying to understand, was Yerushalayim special from creation or was special because it was chosen? And I want to try to explain that both are true, even though they both can't be right, but I want to try and explain how they're both right. And it's historically, Tanakh-wise, Yerushalayim becomes special once it's chosen. But thematically, Yerushalayim was special from creation. I'll try to explain what I mean. Now, why? Because when Avram is chosen, remember my whole contention is that Sefer Breshit was written, given to Am Yisrael coming out of Egypt before, in preparation for Har Sinai, to explain to the nation that was just redeemed, Where they're coming from, where they're going to, why they were chosen, who this God is. They're about to enter a covenant to be God's people forever. They need to know who this God is, what God expects from humankind, why we're chosen, our relationship with the nations, why we're 12 tribes. In light of that, it's very easy to understand Sefer Bereshit. But the first thing we hear about Avram Avinu is his chosenness, got it? And the first place Avram comes to when he comes to Israel, first he stops in Shechem when he arrives, but the highlight of his first aliyah, now we go back to our screen, the highlight of his first aliyah is, remember Avram, remember I said before, Avram says, Lech Lecha, remember? Lechu v'nelcha. Okay? Vescha be'varchach v'yeh bracha, v'avracham v'nivruchu v'chal kom shpot adama. That's the Bukhara bracha idea. And then Avram arrives in Israel, and he goes to Shechem, and he moves on. Then v'yitek misham ahara, from Shechem, he goes along the mountain range, along Highway 60, going south. From north to south. Mikedem le Beit El, Beit Olo, Beit El Miyabai Mikedem, Beit Shem Yisbech, Beit Krab B'Shem Hashem. The highlight of his first aliyah is in Beit El, making Yisbech and making a name for God, calling out about God. That becomes his pastime. That's also in Breshit. And then Avram continues and then goes down to Egypt. Now, the problem is Avram has never heard of Beit El, has he? Now, the author of Chumash, I call him the omniscient narrator of Chumash. We attribute that Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? There's an omniscient narrator in Chumash who we trust. So Chumash is telling the reader that Avram built the Mizbech in Beit El, or to the east of Beit El, but Beit El wasn't named yet until Yaakov, agreed? Right? Avram didn't call it Beit El, Avram was called Luz. But Chumash tells us it was in Beit El. We'll see how Chumash knows in a minute. Now, there's a famine. Avram goes down to Egypt. Everyone knows. He comes back after God helps him. V'yal Avram Mitzrayim in chapter 13 from the south. Avram is heavy in his thing. And he continues from the Negev. And where does he return to from Egypt? V'ad Beit El. Ad ha-makom asher yasham ha'olah v'atchila ben Beit El ben ha'ay. Ha-makom ha-mizbeach asher asa sham b'rishona v'ikra sham Avram b'shem Hashem. Got it? See the word makom? Remember, v'yam makom yirachok. The word it's a giveaway. The word makom. Ad hamakom asher samarva. El makom hamisbeach. And there he calls out in God's name. Now, Avram is now in Beit El. He has a fight with Lot or a quarrel with Lot, and Lot decides to pick up and leave. Avram remains, and then what does God tell Avram? V'ashem amar el Avram achari prei Lot miimo. Listen to the wording. Okay. Sana inecha ure. Avram is still in Beit El. Says, from this place, lift up your eyes and see in all four directions. Mina makom asher atab sham. Sofona v'negba v'kedma v'yama. Look in all four directions from this high place in Beit El. Ked kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh l'chad nenu l'zarcha ad olam. V'samti et zarcha ka'afar ha'aretz. First time. Got it? The first time we have an analogy to how numerous we're going to be. But the first time it's afar ha'aretz. Now, kochvei ha'shamayim is beautiful and chol ha'yam. Afar ha'aretz is not what we would expect, isn't it? Mike, you wouldn't expect that. No, it's, once I use kochvei ha'shamayim, I would expect that's a much nicer description of how numerous we're going to be and we're shining. Even chol ha'shasfatayim is also beautiful. But afar ha'aretz, there's something special. It's not the most ideal pick, but I think it's intentional because this was set up. So sof maaseh b'machshava tchila, meaning that's why we're told that Adam was made afar min adama. To understand this connection to Avram Avinu. Asher oshtim lo tafar ha'aretz kam zarcha yimaneh. Okay? Kumi telech ba'aretz. Okay? And then Avram moves his tent and ends up in Elonei Mamre, where he was entertaining guests and he builds a mizbech there again and makes a name for God. Now, the word afar ha'aretz is here in one other time. Guess where? In chapter 28 in Yaakov's dream. Let's just go real quick to chapter 28. Where are we here? Chapter 28, verse 10. Okay. Vayitzei Yaakov mibeersheva. Everyone knows the story by heart. Vayitzgab b'makom. See the giveaway? Vayitzgab b'avnei ha'makom. Vayitzgab b'makom ahu. Vayitzchalom v'nesu matzav arza, etc. He has his dream. And Hashem is nitzav alav and tells him, v'nei Hashem ha'avar mavicha. This is the land you're getting. And then, remember, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov is worried that he's being unchosen. He has to leave. His life is in danger. And God answers his prayer and says, I'll bring you back. Don't worry. Then he says, but he repeats the blessing now. Remember, Avram needed reassurance after Lot left. God is reassuring Yaakov he's chosen, even though he's leaving. And he repeats basically almost word for word the blessing of Beit El. Why? That Avram got in chapter 13. Vayazarcha ka'afar ha'aretz. Got it? Uforatz tayyama v'kei matzavon v'negba. All four directions. Now, afar ha'aretz in all four directions is only here, and the bracha in Beit El in chapter 13. Okay, and then I'll be with you, and I'll bring you back, and I won't abandon you. Yaakov gets up and says, "Oh, God's presence is here because God appeared to him." He says, "This place is amazing, or awe, full of awe." Okay, hamakom hazeh again. He says, "Ein zekim Beit Elim zeh shar shemaim." He didn't see in a vision a temple here. He's making a pledge. This is the ideal place to build a Beit Elohim. That's explain his vow he's going to make. In other words, if God appeared to me here and answered my prayer and talked about the blessing of Avraham for starting a nation, this is a great place to build an icon or a center to remember this connection to God. Now it's my connection between heaven and earth. Bringing God down to earth or connecting to God. It's not geographically, this is the only place, site. But what happened here is a place to build a Mikdash. That's the idea I want to get across is that if I find a place where God answers prayer, right, where God connects to man, answers prayer, and connects to man, and gives man a challenge and a destiny, then a great idea from man's point of view is to build there a shrine to remember your connection to God. And therefore, Yaakov gets up in the morning. He has a resolve now to build a house for God, but he can't because he's running away. But he says, when I get back and everything's right, and God indeed keeps his promise and takes care of me and I'm worthy, when I come back, I'm going to build a house for God. And therefore, what does he do? He marks the spot. Okay, he takes the Evan from that place. He puts oil on it to mark the spot. And to sanctify it. When he calls it Beit El, he's not naming cities. He's naming its function. He said, this place is a place to build a house for God. I don't think he's saying this is the only site you can build a house for God. He's saying, for me, if he was able to, I would build a house for God here, and hopefully I can when I get back. Now, then he makes his neder. He says, if indeed, or when, im can also mean when God will be with me and keep all of his promises that he told me. And give me, take care of me, give me food and clothing. And I come back in peace to my father's house and God will be with me. Then when I come back and everything's settled down, this spot, Heaven Azot, which I made a Matseva, will be a house for God. Therefore, the first one, our first ancestor, not just to build an altar and call it in God's name, but to talk about a concept of building a shrine, a place to remember this connection to God, to build a house for God. That's Yaakov. And that's why he calls it Beit El. Beit El is not the name of a city. Beit El is a concept. Got my point? Because Yaakov is not in charge of naming cities. Now, where is that Beit El? Is that Ramallah today? Or, you know, Beit El from Tanakh, from Yerovam? Or is that Yerushalayim? You could argue. Thematically, Yerushalayim became that Beit El. Whether or not it was geographically true, thematically it's true. That's my point. It's not a geographic holiness, it's a thematic holiness of a place where a shrine where the Jewish people connect to God and our covenantal promise and our covenantal destiny. Now,
what do you do with Luz?
What? That was the name of the city. But what did God tell even Yosef? El Shaddai Nirai Lai B'Luz Beres Kana Vadar Ekoti, etc. The Luz was the name of the city. Luz was
but
the name
of
the city.
It sounds like Rishona that he said it used to be, and he changed the name.
But he's not in charge of giving out names, Yaakov. We called, no, Yeruvim called it Beit El. But Luz, listen, when you see Ramallah, we'll see later, Beirut, Ramallah from a geographic point of view, we'll get to that part, is a perfect place to build a national capital. In other words, if I had to pick for political reasons and for geographic reasons and centrality, Ramallah is the capital of the mountain. If the center of the country is the mountain range, if I want to leave the coastal plain for international travel and the middle of the mountain range or where the Jews are living, that's Shechem, Beit El, later Beit Lechem and then Hebron, Be'er Sheva, basically Highway 60, then smack in the middle is Ramallah or Beit El and on the north-south highway. And it's a perfect east-west highway smack in the middle because that's Emek Ayalon in one direction going to Modi'in and later to the coastal plain and the other direction going to Yericho. It's a perfect location, and that's why the Givonim, it explains tons of things in Sefer Yoshua. That's why Yeshua goes first to Beit El, because from a strategic point of view, it'll help them divide and conquer. It was the most logical place to put a central city would be Beit El. Yerushalayim is not the natural place to build a capital for lots of reasons, but later it became one. Once it was chosen, that's a different story. What I'm trying to explain is that the concept begins with the Avot, but Yaakov is naming a concept, not a geographic place. He's not saying this place is holier than other places. He's saying this would be a great place to build a mikdash, a house for God, because God answered my prayer here. What I'm trying to get out is that there's intrinsic holiness to the place, but because of what happened there, not that it, that, remember the same way all people created equal, but some are more equal than others. Wherever that's from. I mean, all nations are, there's, everything's equal, but when something happens somewhere.
It's from Animal Farm.
I know. I was just joking. Because we're talking about racism. It's a book about that. I was just kidding on that one. But I'm trying to walk this tightrope between intrinsic dusha to the place where there's something basic about it from creation, but not, that's more thematic than geographic. That's all. And that's the word, I'm using it, the word afar. Saying when Chumash uses the word afar for the creation of man, where God, let me show you the pasuk real fast. Let me just go back to the, stop that and open up my source sheet finally. I wasn't planning on doing this, but I got carried away. Here. Vayitza Hashem Elohim et Adam afar min adama. Got that? Vayipap afim machayim. The word afar now is only going to come up besides Abram saying ani afar ve'efer, but that's in a different context. But here, I have it highlighted here on the source sheet. When Lot leaves, okay? When Lot leaves, he says, look up your eyes from Mekom Asher, all four directions, some up and here. In Yaakov's dream, all four directions. And the blessing, Vasamti Zachar Kafar Haaretz, and Vaya Zachar Kafar Haaretz. And this is in Beit El, and this is in Beit El. In fact, Yaakov calls it here Beit El. Now, this appears to be that Yaakov, because God answered his prayer, God said this is a place to build a Mikdash. But the concept moves later to Yerushalayim, because guess what's going to happen? God's going to answer David HaNav's prayer in Yerushalayim, on Har Moriah. And we'll see, David's going to decide this is the place to build the Mizbeach. Now, the question is, that's the question that's our discussion here. What Rambam is saying, that this was already predetermined from the time of creation. This is the best place, this is the place to build a house for God and the altar. Is that really Pshuto Shemikra? Well, on the one hand, it's definitely not Pshuto Shemikra, because if I follow Pshuto Shemikra, it should have been Beit El, anywhere. It's only because of Yaakov made that decision. God didn't tell Yaakov to build a house for God there. Yaakov made that decision because something happened there. And later, David will make a decision, we'll build a house for God. And no, it's God doesn't tell David, build a Mizbeach on the threshing floor of what later becomes Har Bayit, because I want a temple there. He says, build there to pray to me, to stop the plague. And David prays and God answers his prayer. Then David decides this is a place to build a Mizbeach. But that's the question. When David, let's go back to where we started this year today. Did David go to Yerushalayim and move his capital there because he knew all along this is a place to build the temple? And was Yerushalayim known this is a place to build the Beit HaMikdash? And Saul didn't care about it, but David does care about it. And the reason David moves his capital to Yerushalayim is for religious reasons, because he had a Masorah. Basically, that's what it was. Did David know the Rambam? Got my point? Was David HaMelech aware of that the Akedah was there, that Noach built his Mizbeach there, that Cain Behevel were there? And now, the best source for Cain Behevel building the Mizbeach there, remember, that led to civil war, I mean, to murder and death and fighting. So, I mean, that's one of the worst sources for Yerushalayim being a place of religious wars. Remember, because of what happened, because of a fight over whose sacrifice would be accepted by God, we have the first case of murder. Rabbi Sachs has a book on that, doesn't he? About not in the name of God. And later we'll see a totally different approach to Yerushalayim. But was David HaMelech aware of the approach that the Rambam brings down, that Yerushalayim was chosen from the time of creation? Or is the Rambam referring to something much deeper, a theme of man being from Afar Haaretz? Now, I think Afar Haaretz and God picking Avram Avinu and Vayasek Afar Haaretz, I think that's one deep connection to them. And the Noach connection is going to be, remember where Noach builds his Mizbeach, Hashem smells the Reach and Nicholach and promises not to do it again, and realizes that man is not perfect, but he needs to perfect. Remember, Kietz Adam Ramenu Rav, that whole theme. So I think each case that the Rambam is bringing, that's what I was trying to explain before, each of these Midrashim sound to be something historical. I see them as something very thematic, because in the story of Noach, in the story of Har Moriah, and the Akedah, the idea of a Korban there, and the theme of Afar Haaretz, and the blessing of Avram Avinu, and the theme of Adam, of Noach, and after the flood, and Rech Nichoach, and God realizing Lo Sif Oder Kalel Ki Nishmat Adam Ki Yetzar Adam Ramenu Rav. And there's room for tshuva, as opposed to Rak Rak Halayim before the flood. And the whole idea of creation of man, Lo Avdol Lo Shomra, the idea of Gan Eden, I think thematically, all those ideas are the background to understand the meaning of a Mikdash. Are they historical in the sense that the place itself, that some physical place is holy? Are they thematically important? Again, if I'm saying, is it geographic or is it thematic? I think it's more thematic. And I want to bring the Rambam back into Rambam. I think he's quoting these Midrashim because they relate to a much deeper theme in Chumash. So again, he didn't spill the beans in Chumash, but I think he understands those stories in Chumash are all leading up to this theme of what the idea of a Mikdash is. Okay, I'll get back to this later on. I'm going to get moving. So I have this on the source sheet. Yaakov's neder, and therefore Yaakov makes a neder to build a house for God. Why he doesn't build it? That was a serum sefer Breshit, because it's, basically his kids mess up. And we have to go into exile for longer years. Now, so again, I'm trying to understand religious reasons or spiritual reasons. I could explain David wants to move his capital to Yerushalayim because he cares about God, he cares about building a Mikdash, and his spirituality leads him there, and he wants his capital to be in the holiest site possible. Got it? No. And that I brought the source from the Rambam, all those midrashim. That doesn't seem to be pshat in Chumash, but there's definitely a masara, there's tradition in that direction. Now, going back to Chumash, as opposed to a specific city, I want to say there's a specific tribe that needs a Shekhinah. And that's Moshe's blessing to Binyamin. We're all familiar with, right? I think it's a famous song. Ulevinyamin Amar, Yidid Hashem, okay. Almost all the Parshim say that Binyamin is the tribe where the Shekhinah is supposed to dwell. Where in Binyamin it doesn't say, but somewhere in the tribe of Binyamin, between the shoulders of Binyamin, will be the Shekhinah. Now, I think when we learned Sefer Yeshua, I showed you the word Ketafayim, the border of only on the border of Binyamin, his border with Yehuda to the south, his border with Ephraim to the north. We have Ketef Luza, we have Ketef Yericho, and we have Ketef Gebeninom, and Ketef, there's one other Ketef near Telstone. I forget what it's called. Kiryat Yarim, Ketef Kiryat Yarim probably. But there's four or five Ketafim in the border of Binyamin and surrounding tribes, which alludes to this Pasuk. And that's why we're going to see that having a Mikdash somewhere in Binyamin, or some border of Binyamin. So again, Yerushalayim is going to be the southern border of Binyamin. Gilgal, where it began, was the eastern border of Binyamin. Okay. Kiryat Yarim, where they bring their own to, was the western border of Binyamin. And Beit El is the northern border of Binyamin. And Chazal say that there was a Ritzuach, there was a little Ritzuah, a little path of Binyamin that went all the way to Shiloh to include Shiloh. Notice they had to bring Shiloh into Binyamin because of this Pasuk. There's a Gemara, I think, in Tzvachim that talks about that. Definitely a Midrash. So it could be that David basically wants his capital to have the Mikdash, and he has to go to Binyamin because of this Pasuk about Binyamin, but he wants to keep it in Yehuda. So what's the Pshara? He'll put it on the border. Binyamin is closest possible to Yehuda. Got my point? As opposed to Beit El, the northern Beit El, which is in Binyamin on the closest border to Ephraim, like Yerovam does, David builds his Mikdash on the close border to Binyamin. But everyone realizes Binyamin has to be the Nachav Shekhinah. Now, that has a history that explains a lot of things in Nevi'im Rishonim. Why? Because why is there a civil war against Binyamin? What's behind that civil war? And why are there such high expectations from the tribe of Binyamin? And why is someone so angry when of all tribes, Binyamin does such a terrible, you know, act of you know, when they raped the Ish Levi's Pilegesh, etc. You know the story, I'm sure you remember. In other words, why are they expecting so much from them? And what leads to that civil war? There's something special about Binyamin, certain high expectations of Binyamin that get the people angry. Maybe it's jealousy. I'm unclear, but there's definitely something special about Binyamin. And we'll see Binyamin is going to be key in David's attempt to make Jerusalem the capital. We'll see it very soon in Malachim. Okay. Now, where was the Mikdash? I'll go back to the Rambam. When we came to Eretz Yisrael, right, we put the Mishkan in Gilgal for 14 years. That's Sefer Yeshua. Then we moved to Shiloh. That was also in Sefer Yeshua, Perak Yud Zayin, I think, or Yud Chet, where they bring the Mishkan to Shiloh. And there they built, it was partially portable, partially permanent. The walls were avanim, but the roof was curtains. So it was like half permanent, half portable. That was, you wrote, okay? But there was no roof. It was there for 369 years. It's following Seder Olam. And when Eli died, which means when Shiloh was destroyed, when they took their own captive, they moved the Mishkan to Nov, that we know that from Nov Yerachonim, okay? And when Shmuel died, what are Chazal saying in Seder Olam? That Nov Yerachonim was killed, right? Pretty much together with Shmuel's death. But when Shmuel died, they moved the Mishkan from Nov to Givon. It makes sense that after what Shaul did to Nov Yerachonim, they must have moved it. Now, and we know the Mishkan was in Gibeon because that's where Shlomo goes to Daven. And that's where David goes to Daven also, when the plague breaks out. So we know that we moved the Mishkan beforehand was in Gibeon, in the Mizbech, etc. So we went from Gilgal to Shiloh to Nov to Gibeon. Again, and Nov and Gibeon for sure all in Binyamin. And from Gibeon they built to Beit Olam, which is Yerushalayim. And Nov and Gibeon for 50 years, okay. They says, Kiva Shivna Mikdash Yerushalayim Nesru Kol Hamkomot Kulam Livnot Beit Lashem. That's going to be a big theme in Sefer Melachim. Got it? What the Rambam holds, that once we build Yerushalayim, it's us to build a temple anywhere else. Whoa. We take that for granted, right? When we learn Sefer Melachim, we're going to see that's not so simple, because there's a big machloket. Not is a machloket whether is the Makom Olamim, is it Yerushalayim or Beit El, Ephraim? Or is a machloket, did we reach a Menucha v'Nachala? Is there really an idea that once you reach a certain point, no other place can be holy? You follow? We have to study Sefer Dvarim. I was hoping to get to that, but I said we won't get there. This idea that there's a transition stage where we're portable. When the Mishkan is portable, the portable can go from place to place. It's called Isha Yashar Beinav in Sefer Dvarim. But we'll reach a certain point where it's irreversible. We pick one place of permanence and it can't be anywhere else again. Or is it always possible to move? Can the city lose its holiness and move to another place? We take for granted Yerushalayim is that's why the Rambam is going to bring that up in the beginning. Is that Pshuto Shemikra? We have to read Dvarim Perek Yud very carefully. And again, what's the machloka between Yerovam? We'll talk about that in Sefer Melachim. It's machloka between Beit David and Beit Yerovam over the only place to have a temple, or was this a permanent temple, or is there a need for a permanent temple? Can it really, is there only one place on Makom Mashiach Harashem? I can understand at what time could it only be one place, but can one place lose its importance and we can move it to another place? It was movable in the desert. It was movable during the time of Yeshua. Is it movable forever, or do we reach a certain point that's irreversible? That's a great thing. In my opinion, that's going to help us understand what's going on in Sefer Melachim and what's in the book, what's not in the book. Okay, now, I want to end with, that was supposed to be the main part of this year, the first civil war that we have is in Givon. Everyone familiar? We'll go over the psukim in a minute. Remember, the first clash between Avner's men and Yoav's men is in Givon. Now, remember, Givon is where the Mishkan is, and it was after Nove Kohanim, after Shmuel's death now, the Mishkan is in Givon. The first civil war is in Givon. It goes back to Cain and Hevel, doesn't it? Now, why are the armies of Yoav and Avner meeting in Givon? I can give a geographic reason, or I can give a thematic reason, right? Are they fighting over who's going to run the country? And the assumption is wherever the country is being run from has to control the Mikdash. Got it? Now, is it by chance they met in Givon? Or is Givon going to determine who's going to win this political rivalry? Got my point? But I don't think it's by chance that Givon is the first place of the war between Yoav and Avner. And it's going to be the final showdown between who's going to become king, Beit Shaul or Beit David.
We already had a miracle in Givon.
Not in Givon. Shemesh be Givon Dom, that's where the miracle. There was a miracle, was in Emek Ayalon near Beit Horon. But Yeshua said the moon should stop behind me in Givon, which be to the east, and Emek Ayalon to the west near Latrun. And he was in the middle. He needs more time.
Are you referring to the matchup that started out as a game between?
I call it Bull Run, if you know American history.
Yeah, yeah. And then they started killing each other.
Yeah, we're going to read. I have it right in the source sheet coming up. Okay. So now remember, after Shaul dies, we did this last week briefly. Remember, David sends Malachim to Yavesh Gilad. Why Yavesh Gilad? Yavesh Gilad was the only tribe who didn't come to the civil war against Binyamin. Mm-hmm. Remember? Mm-hmm. They're the ones who didn't come, and that's why they killed all the, and took the women from there.
Yeah.
Somehow people still remain in Yavesh Gilad. But Yavesh Gilad and Sheba Binyamin have a long history. Okay. And who does Shaul save in his first battle? Remember? Melech Hamon wants to take the people of Yavesh Gilad and cut out their eyes, I think, yeah. Well, not each. And Shaul saves them. So they're indebted, and therefore the people of Yavesh Gilad save Shaul's body. We didn't read that parak, but that was the end of Shmuel Aleph. Mm-hmm. And then after Shaul dies, David, in an attempt to unite the kingdom passively, we did this last week, invites first and foremost the most loyal people to Shaul. Understand? He says, Malchim to Yavesh Gilad. And every Yarden, he says, he blesses them for what they did to Shaul. And he says, God should do chesed with you as well. And by the way, remember, they made me king over Yehuda.
Shalom comes from there.
Who comes from there?
Shalom. Oh, no. Oh.
Shalom ben Yavesh. Yeah. That do, it's, yeah, that's probably Yavesh Gilad. No. The, Batakta et Bechem. But what, instead, they didn't buy it. Instead, Avner wants to run the country. Avner ben Ner Sarsva Shalosh Lakach et Ishboshet ben Shol, Avira Machanaim. And he makes Ishboshet a puppet king. Avner's running the show. Mm-hmm. And then by Milchu al Gilad, al Shri, al Yisrael, al Ephraim, al Binyamin, al Yisrael Kulo. It was little by little from Yavesh Gilad, from Ever Yarden to Machanaim to Ephraim, to Menashe Ephraim, and finally to Binyamin. He went first Emek Yisrael, basically from north to south. He takes over the whole country. Now remember, Ishboshet is 40 becoming king. He says he's king for 2 years. Remember, Shaul was king for 2 years, but yeah. he was way more. And yeah. He was king for 7 years, it says too. That's my proof that when it says 2 years, it means his kingdom wasn't legit from the point of view of the book. Ah. 2 years doesn't mean 2 years. Got it? It's 2 years had to be, it's 2 years means it's a way of saying his kingdom really never held. Okay? Beit was after David. And then David was in 7.5 years in Hebron. And now here's our story. Ve'etzei Avner ben Ner v'avdei Ishboshet ben Shaul machanam Givona. That's the famous showdown in Givon. Now, back in the good old days, before Intifada days, I remember in the early 80s when I used to take when I was a lot younger, I used to take the yeshiva guys on Tulim. We'd always go to Givon. Used to be able to go into, there's a brecha even neater than the one in Ir David. You know, with the thing going on and climb into it. Uh-huh. The brecha of Givon dated from that time period. It's still there. That's in a city called El Jib. It's right north of Nevi Samuel. You can't go there nowadays because it's in Area A. But for till 1888-89, I used to go there every year with the yeshiva guys. But it's really nice. It was a really nice site. Anyway, but there's an ancient site, and that's where the Mishkan was. And the question is, why is Avner and Ner meeting in Givon? But Avner goes to Givon, doesn't he? And Yoav goes to meet him. Now, who's not there? Avner is going, and Avdei Ishboshet. Where's Ishboshet?
Oh, he's back in Machanaim.
And where's David? Yoav ben Tzruah Avdei David, Yitzu.
Yeah. Because
this is a war of generals, got it?
Yeah.
But what do they pick? What city are they picking to fight over? They're playing, who's going to control the Mishkan? Who's going to control the temple?
All right.
What I'm saying is, now I can give a very good geographic reason for Givon, because Givon is right next to Ramallah. That's a great central location.
Yeah.
You can give a perfect geographic location why Givon is a natural place where the armies would meet.
Uh-huh.
On the mountain range, because it's smack in the middle of the mountain range, on the highest point in the mountain range, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Right along the crossroads. And there's a good military reason and geographic reason for controlling that area. But because the Mishkan is there, maybe there's something deeper. And therefore, if we're fighting over the kingdom, the first place is, let's go where the Mishkan is. In contrast, that David is going to, when he becomes king, he's going to build a new city for the Mishkan and bring the Mishkan to him. We'll get to that next week, I see. We're not going to get there this week. It's just, I want to point out that it's interesting that the first big civil war breaks out over who gets control. Knows who controls the Mishkan is going to who controls the country. And it's war between the generals Avner and Yoav. And then the famous Yisachua and the Faneno. The other time I call this Bull Run, if I remember my American history, Bull Run was where the Civil War broke out, wasn't it? I'm sorry, I apologize to the Canadians and the Israelis. Didn't the American Civil War begin in Bull Run? Do I get my history right? Where did the Civil War begin?
Fort Sumter?
Fort Sumter. Shooting on Fort Sumter.
I thought there was a big show of forces and someone shot. There was a big show. Everyone came to see, like, whose army's bigger. They were fighting.
That was later. That was 1862, maybe.
Okay, but wasn't that in Bull Run? I haven't done this since I was in 10th grade, so I don't remember. I thought it was Bull Run, but maybe I forgot my history.
No, it may have been, but it's not where the war started.
Okay. My mistake. But I'm not a bucky in American history. I remember that. All I remember is that I remember learning some story where no one was planning to fight. It was just a show of arms. Whose army's cooler? Whose army's bigger? It was like a It was like his son, everybody came in their Sunday best and, you know, and then, you know, no one planned on fighting. They were just showing whose army's bigger and showing
Fort
off, you know,
Sumter.
These guys things. That was Fort Sumter?
Yeah, I think so. Could be.
But either way, but there's a story like that, right?
Yeah.
It's not where it happened, but what happened there, okay? It's a theme, not a geography. When you have me stop there, they weren't planning on having a fight, you follow? Going to war. They're planning on just having a show of like whose army's, like, who has more, who has a bigger army. And they're meeting at that city. And they say, you know, let's have a little showdown, like a boxing match between, a wrestling match between. And then remember, I think 11 on each side, and then they kill each other. And then leads to a war, and then Asael gets killed. And then we have a family feud between Avner and Yoav, who are all great general friends from before. Anyhow, so that was the story. And, that was the story that, again, about the, I'm trying to explain the connection between running a country and the temple or the Mishkan at the center of it. Okay. So here, by Akumov, how many people go out? 11? No, Shemasar. Notice what tribe is coming here? The Kumu Vavruba Bispar, Shemasal Binyamin, Udishboshe Ben Shao, Shemasal Bevdai David. It's not a war only between Abner's men and David's men, but Dafka between from Binyamin's men, from the tribe of Binyamin, they're the main force supporting Yishboshe. Okay? And then each one kills each other, and then there's a war, for the whole time. And Abner's men are defeated by Abdei David. Okay, now, and then remember, then Avner tries to make a deal. He has trouble with Yishboshet. He makes a deal with David. We talked about, and then Avner gets. We talked about this last week. Let's just have it reestablished. And Yoav and Avishai. In that battle, Asael is killed by Avner. Avner doesn't want to kill him. He tries to go away, but he won't go away. And finally, he kills him. And then, and when Yoav and Avishai when Avner wants to bring make a unity government control and offers to work with David, Yoav and Avishai go and kill him. And then it says that the last line, Yoav and Avishai killed Avner because they killed his brother. And David said it had nothing to do with this. That was back of our bigger theme of why you could look at David as inviting Avner as a setup to kill him. And now the people have to see that, what do we say here? I said before here. But Yemer Avner David, they gather people together here. When Avner came back from Hebron, he called him back. And then David says afterwards, it wasn't my doing, it was Avner, but let him be cursed for all this. And then the people all know that David bears Avner and Hebron. Here's the key passage we need here. V'kol ha'am ikiru v'ayta b'neihem k'lo asher asa ha'melech b'nei kol ha'am tov v'idu kolam v'cho yisrael b'yamuhu ki lo ayta ha'melech l'amit et Avner b'ner. That goes back to the big theme of the book we're talking about. All the questionable acts that looks like David was unfair what he was doing. Really, David was honest and good, and it wasn't his idea to kill Avner. He really wanted a unity government. And Avishai and Yoav are to blame. Someone asked last week, why doesn't David do something to Yoav? He explains. That's Avner. I'm still young in my kingdom. You can imagine a government where the king can't control two of his big sarim. He says, let God take care of him, but he can't run the country without them. But he can't handle them. But he says he disassociates with them, but he can't punish them. Anyway, I'm trying to point out that this story fits very nicely to the theme of our book of trying to explain that David was righteous in his ways and all the stories that seemed bad about David that were unfounded. My time's way up, so I better stop here. And then with Rechav and Bana, I just want to point out that they're also from Rechav and Bana, who kill Ishbosheth and bring his head to David. They're also from Bnei Binyamin. And then we have to talk later about we'll do this next week already with chapter 12. I didn't realize how late it was. I'll stop the share. So that's the main share I did today. Next week, we'll go back and see what David actually does in Yerushalayim. In other words, why why picks Yerushalayim, why he captures it. Does he capture Ir David? Does he capture Har HaBayit? You know, it's what's going on in Rav Na'ivu Yevusi, and who are the Ibrahim and Pesachim Ir David? It gets really complicated. But today I want to talk about whether the main thing I want to get across today is David, does everyone know all along that Yerushalayim is a holy place? Or is it because David picked the place, that's why it became holy, but there's a good religious reason for David going to Yerushalayim, but there's also be a good political reason. And later we're going to tie the political reason and the religious reason being, they seem to be different, but I'll explain why they're actually the same underlying reason. Let me check the chat, which I didn't look at all. Chat real quick. Okay. How do we know that Chumash is Har Moriah is one recognized today? That's a good question. That's a lot of history. That's a lot of archaeology, but that's easy to prove. That Har Moriah today is where the Mikdash was, that's for sure. Notice, where Shlomo built the Mikdash, that's Har Bayit today. Notice, the Temple Mount today, for sure, that's where Shlomo built his Mikdash. That we can prove in archaeology. How do we know that was Har Moriah? We have the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. So, okay. Can you use the altar? Okay. Oh, okay. I just have the translation there because that's where I copied the Pesukim from. I don't think the altar translation is online. If it is, someone send me a link to it. I'm more than happy to use the altar translation if I could find, if it was available. Awesome. Yeah, full of awe. In Manorama Komazet, place is full of awe. Awesome. Very good. Asher. What do you do with the cultic sites of Ibau and Shiloh? But Lee, explain me that question. Of Harival and Shiloh. I mean, why Harival, that's a Pasuk of Chumash. And Shiloh, oh, I mean, as far as Binyamin, you're right. That's why Chazal tried to solve it with Ritzuah Ktana. Eval was a one-time place of worship. But I agree, it's not so posh that Binyamin, the Mikdash can only be in Binyamin. We'll see later that the Aron is going to go from Shevet to Shevet. We'll see that when we get to David. But these questions right on the mark. There's assumption of something being special about Binyamin, but that would be the question, is it, does Mikdash have to be in Binyamin, or that's a gesture that David does to unite the country? Both British and Chinese history have royal group travel serving the land and memorial built at each place they stopped overnight. Okay. In other words, having memorials to military victories makes sense. Okay. And okay. That was, okay. Bull Run was close after Fort Sumter. Okay. Not too far off. Fort Sumter, Charleston. Okay. I'm learning now. I get my class back in history. It's been 50 years. Confederate forces fired on a fort, which I'm okay. Okay. I got it right. Okay. Okay. I got a little support. That was the first major battle. Okay. That's good. Didn't David pick Jerusalem through prophecy? I'm not sure who Zoom users. His question was, didn't David pick Jerusalem through prophecy? We'll talk about that. Yeah. And where the Dome of Rock is next by the temple, if you want to give you a share on that, but that's not exactly a topic in Shmuel, but it's a lot of fun. Where is Evan Ashtiyah, the Dome of the Rock? That's a really interesting topic. Why David picks Yerushalayim? That'll give a whole share on that next week or the week after, if we get that far. What did David know ahead of time, or there's what caused David to pick Yerushalayim? You have to talk about. That'll be big. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm over time again. Any other quick questions out loud?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Asher.
The geographical relationship between Shechem and Beit El Ha'ai. It's on there. There's a road going that way. There is, isn't there? Isn't it?
Highway 60. Yeah. If you look at the mountain range, maybe I'll share a screen real fast. Keep on talking, Asher. I'll find, in the meantime, I'll open
Shechem,
up the screen.
Shechem is somewhat low, but there,
Shechem is
sitting in a bowl.
Yeah, it's sitting in a bowl between two big mountains, between Har Eval and Har Gerizim.
Right. Avraham Avinu went through, Avraham Avinu God appeared to him in Shechem. He's traveling on the road from north to south. And he doesn't go out at Megiddo to the coastal road. He continues going through the center of the country. He's on the road, and it's natural that the road should go through the valley. But now, what is the relationship? The Ha'ai, Beit El Ha'ai, which is the next place where Abraham goes, is south and slightly east of Shechem. So what is it like from a geographical point of view?
Okay.
He's going up, but it's like a sort of a natural progression, isn't it?
Yeah. So see the map I'm sharing with you? So when you come from the Gilad, when you're coming from Mesopotamia, you come from the Gilad. You can't see. So here you come through Nahal Yabok, where Yaakov comes also. Yaakov Avinu enters Israel the same way as Avram did, because they go to Shechem first. When they come from Nahal Yabok, when you come from Nahal Yabok, you go what's called Nahal Tirsa, and you end up here. In Nahal Tirsa, you end up here in Shechem. Maybe I'll show you a different view from later on. Here's Shechem. Shechem is on the top of the mountain range, but between two big mountains. So Shechem is called the Michmatat is the name of the valley in Arabic. But their Shechem is in the valley between two big mountains, and the road goes between those two mountains, but still on the mountain range. So from Shechem he goes to Shiloh, smack in the middle over here. From there he goes to Beit El, which is over here. It's north of Yerushalayim, where my circle is over here. Now Beit El is important because you have this valley, Nahal Ayalon. I'm sorry, this is Emek Ayalon going to the coastal plain, and you have the road going here to Yericho, the other direction. And then he goes to Hebron, which has two forks in the mountain range, and Nahal Beit Guvrin going to Ashdod and Ashkelon. So it makes Hebron important. And then down Beersheba should be really over here more. This map isn't so exact. It's just, a very general picture of it. But basically the oldest stories in Sefer Bereshit are Shechem, remember? Beit El, Hebron and Beersheba, right? Beit Yaakov and Beersheba, Beit Achrona, Bichat Yosef, Shechem and Hebron, and the Halach Echorim Beshchem, goes a little bit north over here. But all the stories of the Avot are on the mountain range. When things are on the mountain range, you may go to Nahal Grar. Grar is basically Otef Aza today. Grar is over here.
And what you described, Givon, Givon, I mean, it's not there now, but it used to be where the road turned, and the road has changed slightly. But once where we turn the road there, right next to Givon, is a triple watershed. One Nahal,
right here, yeah.
One goes to the Mediterranean, one goes to the Dead Sea, and one goes all the way around through Yerushalayim and then back out to the Mediterranean. It's a triple watershed point.
Yeah, I mean, it's mainly the double one. The main water says north south, but you're right. But Givon is right below Beit El. Right next to Nevi Samuel. But it's right on the road. It's right on the 443 road, the Emek Ayalon road, on the way down to Beit Horon. It's an ideal location. It's a great water source. But Givon is good. It has a really good water source. And it's near the top of the mountain range and very close to the crossroad highway.
And it's also fairly flat around it.
Givon nowadays is basically part outskirts of Ramallah.
But it's flat there. When you go by there, you see the land.
It's a river, but it's still on the top. It's high in the mountain range. But it's the beginning is the road that goes down to Emek Ayalon.
It's the top of the mountain range, but it's a plateau, basically. It's
not a plateau, not as big as Emek Ayalon, but it's a relatively wide plateau. But you have the mountain of Nebi Samuel to the south of it, and you have the hill of Ramallah to north of it by Mitzpah. So it's pretty smack in the middle. But it's a logical place of putting the Mishkan for a while, and it would be a decent area for a camp because you need a water source next to a Mishkan. And the Brechan Givon is very well built. I think it's Canaanite. It's from the time of the Avod, I think, even. Brechan Givon. I think it's late bronze, even. Maybe early iron.
But okay, Rabbi.
Okay, I'm going to, when I start with geography, I'll get, I got a little lesson on the American Civil War, but I wasn't too far off, I heard. Well, Run was the second battle.
Okay, well,
first major battle.
We skipped that in Canadian history.
Okay.
Different. Okay.
From NYU.
You start with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Hamilton Wildcats or something.
No, the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Edmonton Oilers last night set the all-time record for most wins in a row by a Canadian hockey team. That actually, once you're talking about hockey, but then the Leafs are in the middle of a losing streak. So, anyways, but they've been in a losing streak for since 1967. Usher remembers the last time the Leafs won.
Johnny Bauer was in goal.
You were probably at the parade in Toronto. I don't remember the last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. So it's before my time. But anyways, all right. Anyways, all right. You have to talk about Naryshka sometimes. Anyways, okay, everybody have a good week, good day. Benny Gesundheit, of course, is giving a sheer brief and Sefer Tehillim in 28 minutes. And then tomorrow, Yosef Lindell and Mark Shapiro and Rabbi Shulman on Tuesday, et cetera, all our classes throughout the course of the week. So we look forward to learning with you. And please do invite a friend to join, and everybody should be well. Hear good things. And Rabbi, we'll see you next week and get back into David.
Rabbi Liebtag, you teach with David Gottlieb?
In the same yeshiva. We don't, not together, but in the same yeshiva, yeah.
You don't have to teach the same group of people or anything like that.
What, you teach the boys in yeshiva?
No. I'm just curious. I was there on Shabbos. My son-in-law is a member of his shul, so I.
Oh, in Beit Shemesh, not in yeshiva.
In Beit Shemesh.
Okay, yeah, Beit Shemesh. Okay.
He comes
up every day. Okay, good.
Okay, all right, be well, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye. Okay, thanks. Bye.